you try to imagine what the ancient world looked like, what comes to mind? Gladiators in the Colosseum? Roman emperors reclining in togas being fed flamingo tongues? Or maybe something more along the lines of Monty Python's Life of Brian. But you might be surprised to learn that there was a sophisticated culture 1,000 years before all of that, stretching from Egypt to Babylon, a globalized world of trade and diplomacy. And that world, known as the Late Bronze Age, is what archaeologist Eric Klein studies. He says we would be amazed by how contemporary it feels. And also that we're now facing some of the same challenges they faced, which led to their ruin. Klein recently stopped by our studio to talk with Steve Paulson.
Eric, you've done something rather audacious. You've come up with an actual date for when civilization collapsed in the ancient world, 1177 BC. What happened then?
Well, in 1177 BC, most of the known world in the Aegean and the Eastern Mediterranean collapsed, came to an end. It was the 8th year of Ramses III, the pharaoh of Egypt. But I do have to say that that's just a shorthand for the overall collapse. Just like we say 476 is when the Roman Empire collapsed, and we know it actually took about 100 years. Same thing here.
And you're talking about the collapse of what we've come to know as the Bronze Age.
As the Late Bronze Age, absolutely. So when we talk about the collapse of civilizations, we're talking Mycenaeans and Minoans from Greece. We're talking about the Hittites in Turkey, Cypriots in Cyprus, Canaanites in what is now Israel, Lebanon, Syria, Assyria and Babylon in what is now Iran and Iraq. We've got about 8 or 9 civilizations that are all interacting, and they all go down at the same time, like a set of dominoes. Mm.
And to put this in perspective, the Bronze Age flourished for nearly 2,000 years across this vast expanse of land.
Right.
You say there was a global economy going on here.
There was. Now, you know, put that into context, it's not global like us today, but it was global for their time. I would say from Italy on the west to basically Iran or Afghanistan in the east, and then Turkey in the north down to Egypt in the south, they are globalized. They are all interconnected. Most people are surprised at how sophisticated they were, especially in terms of, say, the trade networks. And we've got one written text that talks about a pair of Minoan shoes, leather shoes, probably sandals, that were sent all the way from Crete to Hammurabi in Babylon, you know, the famous lawgiver, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, back in about 1800 BC. And yet the shoes, they say, were returned.
Now, they weren't liked, so they were sent back.
Yeah, are they too small? Were they last millennium? I mean, I don't know. But again, you know, there are the parallels to today where you're like, wait, that happens today all the time.
So what happened then in 1177 BC?
Well, we've got a group that comes through actually twice, in 1207 and in 1177, which archaeologists and historians have called the Sea Peoples. I don't think that they're completely the reason for the collapse. I don't think that invasions are enough. You can survive those. But certainly they've been the kind of the bogeyman for more than a century now. So what I wanted to do was to take a look at exactly what could have caused the collapse of civilizations.
So there were a range of factors, but there were these people who actually did invade. They invaded Egypt, right? And there was a big battle with Ramses III?
Absolutely. There's not only a battle, there's two battles. There's a land battle and a sea battle. In both cases, the Egyptians win. They probably actually ambushed them. But it's a Pyrrhic victory. They are weakened so much that they're never the same again. Now, this is the New Kingdom period. So King Tut, for example, this is his time period. Hatshepsut, Akhenaten, I mean, Ramses II. All these people are living in this, say, last 300 years. So when it goes down, it really goes down. But I don't think the Sea Peoples are totally responsible. In fact, I think they're as much victims as they are oppressors. So yes, they're coming in, but they're not Vikings. They're not raiders. They're migrants. They're coming with their families. We see a picture of them that Ramses leaves us with an ox cart with the women and the children, the belongings there. So I think a better analogy, not Vikings. It's more like the Dust Bowl of the 1930s with people leaving Oklahoma and going to California. That's what we're looking at. And in fact, that's where we've got a parallel. Today's Sea Peoples, we've actually got a choice. Are they the refugees that are flooding Europe, leaving the crisis in Syria? Or are they like ISIS that's busy destroying the culture in the Near East. You know, which ones are they? Are they the oppressors or are they the victims? And one could say that our version of the Sea Peoples is actually both.
Hmm. And you say there were other factors that led to this collapse of civilization as well, lots of environmental factors.
I do, because I think, you know, we are resilient, and so we've survived invasions. We've survived things like climate change. In fact, there is drought at that time. We now have the scientific evidence from North Syria and Cyprus and Israel and Greece that they are trying to survive a drought that lasted 150 to 300 years.
So you're saying there was climate change back then as
Absolutely,
well?
Absolutely, there's climate change, though it's not like the Hittites had SUVs back then. This is Mother Nature doing climate change, but there definitely is. And then the written texts from the period talk about famines. They talk about people dying. But we also have things like earthquakes. In fact, you know, modern seismologists talk about an earthquake sequence where if you have an earthquake on a fault line, like the North Anatolian fault line that goes across Turkey, if you have an earthquake and it doesn't release the pressure completely, you'll have another earthquake right next to it, right nearby, either days later, weeks later, a year later. And if that one doesn't release the rest of the pressure, you'll have another one and another one. So you've got to factor in earthquakes as well. And that's where I think we've got a perfect storm because, you know, if you have a drought, some of you are going to survive it. If you've got famine, some will survive. If you have invaders, some will survive. If you have earthquakes, some will. What if you have them all? What if one and then another and then another and then another and you've got a perfect storm?
So a lot of the things that you've mentioned suggest possible modern parallels. You know, the climate issues, obviously turmoil politically in today's world.
Right.
I don't know about the earthquakes yet.
No, but we do, actually.
We do. Yeah. But don't we always have these issues? I mean, sort of throughout history. I mean, the question is, are there enough that cluster together that actually cause collapse?
Well, that's the big question. And so how many other times in history have we had these clusters of unfortunate events, shall we say? I think we've probably had them quite often, but in most cases, there are mitigating factors that have stopped the collapse. We are now advanced enough to realize this. So what would we do to stop this, right? You know, I would say, for instance, one thing is to basically stop denying there's climate change and to do something about it. We can have control over some of the things. And I would say one of the examples would be in 2008 when Wall Street started melting down and people stepped in to fix it. Had they not stepped in and it kept going, you know, the head of the World Bank at the time said we were that close to a global financial crisis. So when you have a complex system, it only takes a little bit and it throws the whole thing out of whack. And so actually, I think that's why the parallel to today is even bigger than one might expect. Because usually when you're talking about a collapse, it's, you know, one entity. It's the Mayas going down, mm-hmm. or it's the Roman Empire. In this particular case, back in 1177, you have intertwined civilizations that all go down.
Which, of course, is what we have today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is a case where history does have some things that it could teach us if we want to listen and learn. And I think this is one where one of my colleagues, Carol Bell in England, made the analogy. She said, you know, tin for them back then, they needed tin to make bronze. That's the same situation as us needing oil to make gasoline.
I'm wondering if it also, I mean, coming back to our discussion of civilizations collapsing and, you know, might we have collapse today, whether that might offer some hope as well. I mean, it's sort of like there's always something that comes and replaces the thing that fell apart.
Absolutely. There's always a phoenix that rises from the ashes. And in fact, in the book, I end with saying, you know what? Yes, this was terrible for them. And yes, we lost a lot when the late Bronze Age all collapsed. But you know what? Out of the ashes, after the Dark Ages are over, we get all kinds of new things. I mean, in part because of the power vacuum that's caused by the collapse, we get the Israelites moving in and we get, you know, monotheism. And in Greece, a couple centuries later, we get democracy. So, you know, what if the late Bronze Age hadn't come to an end? Would we have had democracy and all of that? So there is a silver lining, if you want to look for it. And we are the direct descendants of those new things. We've got stuff from the late Bronze Age, of course, already. I mean, Hammurabi's Law Code and this, that, and the other. And even Akhenaten is maybe starting a little type of monotheism. But we are the direct descendants of what happened after the late Bronze Age collapse.
Eric Klein talking with Steve Paulson. Eric's a classicist and archaeologist at George Washington University. And he's the author of 1177 BC, the year civilization collapsed.